information is free.
The law? Oh, yeah.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Appear to border
and it shows.
The law?
Oh, and obey.
The country.
You will remember nine you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Whether he went on with a diary or whether he did not go on with it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 200th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show since 2005. Your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. It is the long-awaited 200th episode, and this week we feature mass animal die-offs and the murder of John Wheeler, news purge warnings with all the latest alternative media and open-source intelligence, plus an in-studio interview with an old friend of Media Monarchy. It's all here, my friends. January 7th, 2011, episode 200 for MediaMonarchy.com. Canary in a Coal Mine, going back to their 1980 record, Zenyatta Mandata. That was, of course, the Police. And that song describes, in so many ways, so many of the things that we're seeing swirl around our world. Welcome, my friends, to the 200th episode of Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. Since 2005, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And of course, the fine folks that rebroadcast and restream and archive and all of the things that they do for Media Monarchy, like ZeroPointRadio.com, blasting out worldwide on the web, as well in Casper, Wyoming on 92.3 FM and 1670 AM. They got a lot of new things going on the site, ZeroPointRadio.com. And again, as we're going to say about all these sources for independent, non-commercial, non-corporate alternative media, if you find it valuable, please donate. The worldwide home of free speech, RevereRadio.net, carrying us live. And thanks to FROlympia.org, BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net, OneSkyRadio.com, StickAM.com/Ground Zero Radio. We got 89.9 FM, Patriot Radio in La Mesa, Texas. And of course, thanks to KBOO.info, Radio23.org, and our friends at TragedyAndHope.com. I've also been remiss in not mentioning CJSF.ca, 90.1 FM in Vancouver, British Columbia, broadcasting the audio from NewWorldNextWeek.com, my weekly video series with James Corbett. And I'll tell you quickly, any number of ways you can get in touch with me, Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Ustream, Blip, Cafe Press, Podomatic, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, Archive.org, all those links are connected. All of those links are on the website. We've got a P.O. Box, P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon, 97212. Send media to the monarchy. And again, a huge thanks to all the folks who donate that help make this possible. I suppose I envisioned a grandiose 200th episode, but as the end of the year crept up on me, and we had the Red Ice interview, and we had the mixtape, and all the other holiday things that swirl around, and everybody has all their things we've got to take care of, you and me, and all of us. Needless to say, what I'm trying to say is episode 200 is not going to be any kind of grandiose look back about the last year or any of those kind of things, because again, time is moving forward quite quickly, and we got to keep up with it somehow. We glance at Google News, repeal of healthcare overhaul advances in the House. Obama names Sperling to lead economic council. We'll touch on that, of course, in this episode. Jobs growth stumbles even as jobless rate falls. As the rug steadily, slowly, consistently being pulled out, a destruction of the middle class. And to new listeners to the show, we welcome old and new. Old-time listeners know we're nonpartisan, not left, not right, trying to see through the lies on both sides of the phony left-right paradigm. So many things I want to say. All the folks out there who help out in one way or another in making this show happen. Again, I can't do it all justice. I'm just so, I guess I'm thankful. I know it's long past Thanksgiving, but I'm thankful for what we're trying to grow here. And what we're trying to grow independently. So my friends, unless you were hiding over the last several days, you know quite well there's been a strange amount of stories ever since New Year's Day. And the way we're going to do this We've got two main articles we're going to hit, and then we're going to hit a compilation piece that hopefully will further break this story down. And the first is a question. Is mass fish and bird die-off connected to government testing? This posting has gone pretty well in the Google world. I know I've had some folks tell me it's coming up second or third in any kind of search of mass bird die-off. And this story even had the Christian Science Monitor wondering, what's a conspiracy theorist to think? But we're going to take the text from Paul Joseph Watson. A mass die-off of birds and fish in Arkansas, which prompted a response by U.S. Environmental Services, has residents asking questions about the cause. Could secret government testing be responsible for the carnage? Around 2,000 red-winged blackbirds, as well as ducks, fell to their death over a one-mile area of Beebe, Arkansas, last Friday night, New Year's Eve. U.S. Environmental Services wore hazmat suits and gas masks as they picked up the dead birds on Sunday. In a related story, 100,000 fish were found dead in northwest Arkansas. They were found along a 20-mile stretch between the Ozark Dam, or the Oz Ark Dam, if you like, and the Highway 109 Bridge in Franklin County. And again, this is one of those stories where we have a massive collection, a data dump of links and stories and videos and documentation and maps. So there's no way I'll be able to read all this into the record, but rest assured, just as the case with the previous 199 episodes of Media Monarchy, we provide the links and we provide the documentation for you and ask you to go do more research and make up your mind and come back and tell us. But let's get to the heart of this question. The U.S. government has been repeatedly caught engaging in illegal bioweapons tests over American skies that have maimed and killed not just animals, but humans as well. The history of U.S. government biological testing includes deliberately infecting Americans with syphilis, malaria, and other bacteriological agents. Given this history of governments across the world performing unwitting experiments on their populations, the number one suspect in such cases such as this should always be government, or some black shadow, hidden hand government. Just a few months ago, it came to light that in the late 1940s, American public health doctors deliberately infected nearly 700 Guatemalans, prison inmates, mental patients, and soldiers with venereal diseases. And it comes out decades later, and you say, oh, sorry about that. And yet again, the crazy conspiracy theorists are proven right. To make this story that much more bizarre, we had a seemingly unrelated story developing concurrently with the mass animal die-offs of an interesting, it sounds horrible to say an interesting murder. I don't want to take any of these things lightly or glibly. A man's dead in a disgusting way. John P. Wheeler III, a counsel on foreign relations and private military contractor with MITRE, M-I-T-R-E, CFR MITRE insider John P. Wheeler, found dead in a Delaware landfill. And we'll take this from Delaware Online. Newark police identified the body on New Year's Eve at the Cherry Island landfill as 66-year-old John P. Wheeler of Newcastle. Wheeler, who lived part-time in Old Newcastle, worked as a defense consultant and had a long and decorated military career that involved working in the Reagan and George W. Bush administrations. Wheeler also served as chairman of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund, which built the wall in Washington, D.C. His death has been ruled a homicide. Newark police had a crime scene unit at Wheeler's home in Old Newcastle with crime scene tape roping off the prominent three-story brick home with black shutters. Friends and neighbors were shocked to learn Wheeler had been murdered. This is just not the kind of guy who gets murdered, said an attorney who represented Wheeler. This is not the kind of guy you find in a landfill. Wheeler worked in Washington, D.C., and investigators have determined he was on an Amtrak train from Washington to Wilmington on Tuesday, said Newark Police Lieutenant Mark Farrell. The last place they can put him is getting off the Amtrak train in Wilmington. And then the story became stranger. And we'll get to the documentation. We'll get to the connections. We're going to hear about the video, the surveillance video that emerged of John Wheeler wandering the streets like a crazy person. And it brings up more and more and more and more questions. So I think the thing to do is to play this compilation of clips that I think will get you up to speed, and then we'll blast through all the rest of the related updates, as well as a new video and interview that I did yesterday that's already live on youtube.com/mediamonarchy. So let's listen to this compilation of clips that goes through the mass animal die-offs and the mysterious murder of John P. Wheeler.
This is a Fox News alert. We are getting breaking news right now on an aide to three former presidents found murdered. His body dumped in a landfill in Delaware. John Wheeler served three different presidential administrations, the Reagan and both Bushes, worked for the Secretary of Air Force at one point as well, and now police are desperate for any clues into who might have wanted him dead. Trace Gallagher is helping us with the breaking news. What's the latest, Trace?
Boy, this is developing as a major story, too, Shannon. 66-year-old John P. Wheeler III, now identified as the body, not only served in the administration of George W. Bush, but he also served in the administration of the first George Bush, as well as Ronald Reagan. Now, we're being told that his death has been ruled a homicide. His body was dumped out of a garbage truck into a landfill in Newark, Delaware. Detectives say that particular truck made 10 different stops at garbage bins around the area, and they believe that Wheeler's body was in one of those garbage bins, but apparently had not been in whatever bin the body was in for very long now. He was last seen leaving an Amtrak station on December 28th. He had come from Washington, D.C. back to Delaware on the train, and the detectives say that he reportedly had been quarreling with some of his neighbors. Listen to his record, Shannon. He was a Vietnam veteran, a graduate of Yale Law School. He was in charge of the committee that raised all the money to get the Vietnam Memorial built on the Washington Mall. He was the Assistant Secretary of the Air Force under George W. Bush, and most recently he was working to get ROTC programs put back onto Ivy League campuses. John P. Wheeler III, now found dead in a landfill in Newark, Delaware. It has been ruled a homicide. As of this point, there are no suspects. We will continue to bring you breaking news on this, Shannon, as it comes in.
So many questions, Trace. Thank you very much for the updates.
Okay.
And we turn to a just-discovered murder that has stunned a lot of this nation's veterans and those who knew the victim. His name was John Wheeler. He was a West Point graduate who served three different Republican presidents and was one of the original driving forces behind the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington. On New Year's Eve, police discovered his body at a landfill in Delaware. Our justice correspondent Pete Williams is with us with more on this discovery tonight. Pete, good evening.
Brian, Delaware police are working now to reconstruct the last few days of John Wheeler's life, hoping that will help them solve the mystery of who killed this prominent advocate for veterans and why. Police discovered the body last Friday morning at a landfill and over the weekend officially identified the victim as John Wheeler, age 66, resident of Northern Delaware, but best known as the chairman of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund, raising the money to build the wall.
Do our lives reflect the best that was in the lives of those whose names are on the walls of this memorial.
Police in Newark, Delaware, are tonight asking for public help in reconstructing his movements since December 28th, when he was last seen getting off an Amtrak train to Wilmington from Washington, D.C. Investigators say his body was apparently dumped into one of 10 trash receptacles somewhere along this route in Newark. They're checking the locations where the collection truck stopped. John Wheeler, a 1966 West Point graduate, served in Vietnam and became determined to honor the service of veterans after returning home to find a country turned against the war, as he would later recall.
I felt total isolation. I felt like I'd come back. I might as well have gone to, felt like I'd gone to France. I did not feel part of our culture. I felt isolated.
The founder of the group responsible for the Vietnam Memorial in Washington says Wheeler was passionate.
Many of his friends got killed during his military tour. He was a man who had a lot of pain, but he took his pain and he put it to good use.
Wheeler was involved in a recent controversy in court trying to block construction of a house across the street from his that he claimed would block his view of the Delaware River. Tonight, police are declining to speculate on a possible motive or on the cause of death. They're hoping that public tips will help them come up with some of the answers to that, Brian.
Pete Williams in our Washington newsroom tonight. Pete, thanks.
Another Fox News alert. Breaking news now in the strange case of thousands of dead birds discovered in Arkansas. We are now learning of a second similar incident. This time, some 500 birds discovered dead on a highway in nearby Louisiana. Now, that's just about 300 miles south of where the first dead birds were found in Arkansas. As many as 5,000 blackbirds literally dropped out of the sky there. Also nearby, about 100,000 fish went belly up in a river. All of this clearly causing some concern.
Well, some of them were a little panicked, thinking it was the end of the world, quoting 2012 prophecies and things like that. And there's all kinds of speculations on what's happened.
Laura Ingalls following this story for us live in our New York newsroom. Laura?
Hi, Megan. Well, veterinarians and biologists with the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries are still out collecting the fallen birds this afternoon, which were first reported to the agency Monday morning. A department spokesperson tells us just last hour several bird carcasses have been sent out to two independent labs for testing. Now, the state's top wildlife vet was not able to visually determine a cause of death and is very curious to find out, as many of us are, to see if there's a connecting thread to the Arkansas New Year's Eve incident. Preliminary test results in that case show the birds had extensive bleeding and blood clotting in the breast tissue area, which scientists say which was most likely caused when the birds hit each other, houses, cars, and sidewalks when they were apparently spooked out of the sky. Wildlife officials say the birds may have been startled out of their large roosting groups after hearing loud noises like fireworks or cannons from New Year's Eve celebrations. Now, bird experts we spoke with today tell us that could be the reason for the bizarre bird behavior, noting that during the summer around the 4th of July, blackbirds are usually spread out and in breeding mode and aren't usually all clustered together at night like they are in the winter. And I just got off the phone with a spokesperson with the U.S. Geological Survey who says a search of their records show there has been 16 events in the past 30 years involving blackbirds where at least 1,000 of those birds died at the same time. Other noteworthy cases just last week, as you mentioned, about 100 miles away from Beebe, Arkansas, nearly 100,000 dead and dying drumfish washed up along a 20-mile stretch of the Arkansas River. Then we had last year along the California coast, there was an alarming number of sea lions that were found dead or sick in Monterey. Marine biologists there believe that was due to a food shortage. Test results continue to be run on the dead birds from both states to check for toxins, viruses, or bacteria to make sure they've got the right cause of death. Megan.
Laura, when they talk about this happening historically, does it always happen around a time like New Year's where there would be fireworks in the sky?
Not necessarily. You know, it sometimes can have something to do with the weather, a drop in temperature, strong winds, although the officials in Arkansas say right now they don't believe that weather was a contributing factor. There was a thunderstorm that happened just before this, but that weather had passed through, so they have ruled out weather, at least in Arkansas.
It is eerie. Laura Ingalls, thank you.
Eerie, to say the very least. And these stories about fireworks and otherwise don't really seem to wash, don't make sense. I'm not saying it's the apocalypse or that it's end times, but we've heard references to people just waiting on the locusts. Now, our update posting to this is called The Mystery of Dead Birds, Fish, and Other Weird Stories, where we feature a new 15-minute interview with a new collaborator to Media Monarchy. Her name's Siva Tuva. You can find her as Alchemissus on YouTube, and all those links are all connected up. We had a 15-minute discussion on these mass die-offs and possible bad omens, and all of these stories are linked together, so whoever finds which one first, you can get to the updates. But let's scroll down the list and just read some of these into the record. ActivistPost.com does have a good piece, and again, I wish we had more time to go into the 10 leading theories for what's going on with the dead birds and fish. But we have other stories from Raw Story, Associated Press, all around the world. Mass bird and fish die-offs go global, spark end times panic and speculation, becoming worldwide phenomena. However, the AP has a fact check where they say fish deaths occur regularly. It's just regularly scheduled. And that is the possibility. Is this a copycat effect type event where the stories are now being amplified and built up more and more? So again, my friends, all these links are here. And we have maps. 2 million fish found dead in Maryland. Swedish birds scared to death. Thousands of doves dying in Italy. Thousands of dead snapper washed up on New Zealand beach. And a lot of these things swirl around and connect to a possible earthquake. The New Madrid Fault is right around Arkansas and Louisiana, and where many of these things are taking place. Are these animals freaking out in advance of some type of event? We can't say for sure. We also have all the other related updates about John P. Wheeler. We had a story about the Victoria River mysteriously turning bright green. However, that situation looks like it may be an artist. And the link is there on the National Post to read about the artist who does environmental works. Like something like Andy Goldsworthy, whom you should look up. But we see the memes start to build and we see the memes start to fly around. And that's, to me, what Media Monarchy is in my mind and what I would most want it to achieve, is to be able to show those synchronicities to everybody as they're kind of happening and popping. And I see them just kind of swirl around, and it's maybe it comes to me, and maybe it's because I've always been a media geek. I'm tapped in or connected or something. We were watching a 1978 Robert Altman film called A Wedding the other night, and a guest tells a story about how a bunch of doves fell dead on the wedding crowd. And then I turned to my news feeds, and someone had posted up canary in a coal mine just 2 minutes after my girlfriend said, in regards to this animal die-off story, is it like a canary in a coal mine? Someone posted the police song. So these things happen, and those are the things that I strive to try and get across on the site and the show. Whether or not that's successful or not, I'm not sure. But we can throw on top of it even more. Israelis deny the captured vulture is a spy.
Bird arrested on suspicion of being an Israeli spy. The vulture was found in rural Saudi Arabia, wearing a GPS logger and a leg bracelet bearing the words Tel Aviv University. That was enough to get the animal detained by the Saudi authorities. The story first surfaced in an Israeli newspaper and quickly went viral, with hundreds of posts on Arabic websites claiming that the Zionists were training birds for espionage. Israel's foreign ministry has dismissed the suggestion, and now an Israeli bird expert, Ohad Hatzofa, has called for the vulture to be released.
Last September, we decided to put this GPS logger on its back because we knew that it's not a transmitter. It's recording whereabouts the bird is every 15 minutes. We have location. This is part of a PhD. This vulture, as I said, is probably not an Israeli bird. It's part of a movement and migration of birds. hopefully they would release this bird and probably maybe the awareness would prevent other cases like this.
And there you have it. And things get stranger. We do have a couple related posts on my sister site, cyberspacewar.com, dead birds and fish in Arkansas. And as we add on to some of the theories and speculation surrounding these events, there are speculations about the Earth's rotation, the Earth's magnetic fields. And the last thing I'll say that we want to get across, the connection between John P. Wheeler and the mass animal die-offs, in that, was he a whistleblower? What none of those news clips mention is the fact that he's a bioweapons expert. He was wandering around carrying his shoe like a disheveled homeless man, acting like Frank Olson, dosed with LSD by the CIA. Bumped off. The speculation is, was he going to be a whistleblower? Was John P. Wheeler carrying information relating to government experiments resulting in these mass animal die-offs? That's the speculation. And that's what we just want to put out there, and that's what we want to ask the question. We don't have the answers. Just asking more questions and collecting more data. And with your help, we can figure more of this out. So now, if we have any hope of getting through all this news, we're going to have to blast through the latest news purge. It's the 1-6 news purge, canary in a coal mine. We'll begin with our 9/11 updates. 11 reasons why the threat from Al-Qaeda is not real. Getting into the background of the database. That comes from Disquiet Reservations. NFL's Mark Stepnoski, a prominent 9/11 truther, is going to match the buildingwhat.org donations. And there's also interesting audio with Susan Lindauer, ex-CIA asset and imprisoned 9/11 whistleblower. I suppose we could have put our related BioWars EnviroHealth updates along with the mass animal die-offs. We're just trying to keep everything straight. And that's why we end up having to put together these massive news purges. A couple from naturalnews.com. All the health news for 2011 pre-written for your convenience. However, seriously, they also have the 2010 in review, what happened with health freedom. And relatively recent breaking news, research linking autism and vaccines slammed as an elaborate fraud. This concerning Dr. Andrew Wakefield. And it's being trumpeted all around. This story coming from the Washington Times. The crazy conspiracy theories linking vaccines and autism. Debunked. That's the word used. We have a very interesting batch of holy hexes. And again, if you're new to the show, our holy hexes, where we cover those strange, maybe not exactly occult, but definitely sinister forces, my friends. Catholics' Christmas communion came with hepatitis A.
Health warning affecting anyone who took communion at Our Lady of Lourdes Church in Massapequa Park, Long Island. Eyewitness News reporter Jim Dolan is there tonight with our lead story. Jim.
Well, Liz, during communion at a Catholic Mass, they hand out a small wafer of bread called a host, and they literally hand it out. They take it out of the ciborium and put it directly into your mouth or into your hands, and you put it into your mouth. Well, someone who handled a whole lot of the hosts here at this church on Christmas Day was later diagnosed with hepatitis A, and now the health department is involved, and they want anybody who received communion at either of those two Masses to get vaccinated. At Mass tonight, the priest consecrated the bread Catholics call the host and raised it high, proclaiming it the body of Jesus Christ. But the hosts people received on Christmas Day at two Masses at Our Lady of Lourdes Parish on Long Island may have been contaminated.
Certainly, if I even suspected I had hepatitis or something, you know, more serious than the common cold, I'd be so afraid of passing it on. I mean, it's just, you know, common sense, common courtesy.
But an alert issued by the Nassau County Health Department today suggests someone definitely wasn't being cautious, and that left some potentially exposed to hepatitis A. Individuals may be at risk if they received communion during the 10:30 or noon masses on December 25th, according to the memo.
We actually think it's highly unlikely that anybody would contract the disease from this exposure. At the same time, this is a disease that we can prevent, so we want to make sure that we take the measures to protect people.
I tell you the truth, I'm not overly concerned about it, you know.
And that's how most people at Mass tonight felt.
I just think it's something that we need to be concerned about and be more cautious about, but I think we're safe.
Hepatitis A symptoms include an abrupt onset of fever, fatigue, nausea, and stomach pain, but it may take another week or more to see any symptoms. The vaccination will prevent them.
We are in the window where vaccination will prevent any case from developing.
There's no time to take that on. Further down our holy hexes, killer psalm, Bible verse deemed as threat on Obama's life. That's from WorldNet Daily. Romanian witches using spells to protest new taxes. And lastly, you gotta love this, IHOP restaurant chain drops lawsuit against the IHOP church. Waffles and Jesus together at last. Our interesting selection of media memes. You probably heard the story about homeless Ted Williams and his turnaround. CNN covering the faith-based angle of what caused the reporter to video the homeless guy who had the amazing voice and who's now been turned into probably a 15-minute superstar. Here's good news. Music industry on life support. More on this from Big Hollywood. The really interesting part, as again, we in a way celebrate the crumbling dinosaur formats and forms. But what boomed in 2010? Vinyl records. Even better than that, the vast majority of the people who bought vinyl bought them from independent record stores. But back to the bad. Former covert CIA agent charged with leaking secrets to a newspaper. That's from Christian Science Monitor. And a few obituary notes. Pete Postlethwaite, a British actor, I know him from Usual Suspects, dies at the age of 64. And Per Oscarsson, one of the stars of the Swedish Millennium trilogy, that would be the Girl Who ... trilogy, dead after a house fire. And an interesting note I just saw a few hours ago on CNN, investigation into the death of Notorious B.I.G. heats up. That video is there and the article is there, getting into what's prompting them to move on new leads on a now 13-year-old case. And of course, it connects to Tupac. And I have to say that the film Biggie and Tupac by Nick Broomfield, the guy who made Kurt and Courtney, has a lot of good information in it and interesting questions to be asked. But we must keep moving, and unfortunately, it's to the murder and mayhem. We had our first school shooting of 2011. It happened in Omaha, Nebraska, where the vice principal was killed by... The shooter turned out to be the son of a police detective. And of course, our own Portland police rang in the new year by shooting another person when a taser or a tackle probably could have done the job, but that's how they roll here in Portland. But back in the District of Criminals, man attacked by kids at the L'Enfant Metro stop in the District of Criminals. Meanwhile, bystanders watch and film it as if they had been tipped off in some kind of flash mob kind of way. And another suspicious death. The ex says the woman who died at the Bush home had a heart issue. And as I've said so many times, these stories and headlines probably just act as a way to hopefully whet your appetite to go do more investigation. All of these stories warrant more investigation. But now we're to Obamasiah. Anti-Obama heckler disrupts the reading of the U.S. Constitution when they got to the part about what it takes to be president. They shouted, "Accept Obama." The birther meme rising again. We reported to you on the B-Side 199 episode. Chris Matthews and even Hawaii officials pushing for more disclosure on the birther issue before it blows up in the Democrats' face. But maybe that's why he's bringing all the gangster cronies in, and we see the birdcage liner being changed. As we joke many, many times here in the last several years of the show, we've seen many frontman, mouthpiece, press secretary come and go, and now it's Robert Gibbs' turn to leave the Obama White House, where he says he can do so much more for him outside the White House. And we know that Rahm Emanuel is trying to elbow his way into becoming a mayor of Chicagoland. Meanwhile, Obama picks William Daley as his new chief of staff. Yes, the seventh son of the Daley empire. Gangsterism, pure and true. So he's going to come on as the new chief of staff, but he's going to have to, you know, step down from his VP position at J.P. Morgan. We mentioned, what was the name, Sperling, that we hit at the top of the show. Washington's blog breaking down Obama appointing all more ultimate Wall Street insiders to top posts yet again. But we move now to our Police State International notes, where another piece from Paul Joseph Watson asked the question on New Year's Eve, will it be a happy new year for resistance against the New World Order? But not with stories like this. You can call them integrated platforms. But we know they're mobile prison guard towers coming soon to Walmart. More on that from freedomsphoenix.com. Big Sis Napolitano gets air security tips in Israel. Guerrero, Mexico, and of course that means warrior, Mexico, they started off their new year with 10 murders, including the death of a diplomat and his family. The Miami-Dade police are going to be buying drones so they can keep an eye on Scarface. Meanwhile, Utah's $1.5 billion cybersecurity center groundbreaking underway to be completed October 2013. We're holding our breath. Meanwhile, ratcheting up the fear, but always to be ready.gov, 20 government tips for surviving a nuclear attack. Meanwhile, Brooklyn Bus Depot terror scare over mysterious filming of gas tanks. Capitol Hill evacuated due to unauthorized aircraft. That goes back to New Year's Day. But we'll end, not exactly, it just gets stranger and stranger, and I try not to laugh through these things. I know some folks say on New World Next Week, why is that guy always smiling? Coffee spill diverts United Airlines flight onto the controls. Meanwhile, a Florida professor was arrested for having a suspicious bagel on the plane. More on that from NBC Miami. Nothing like a coffee spill and a suspicious bagel, my friends, in the New World Order. Our last police state note, I've not seen any big updates on, and we just have it as a breaking news blip. Packages explode in two Maryland state buildings. This happened yesterday, January 6th. One, I believe, was addressed to the governor, and one person was injured. The packages never made it to the governor's. But what's this going to be? Keeping in mind the fresh events from Portland to Baltimore of FBI provocateur patsies. This doesn't exactly seem to be following the MO, though. But we always have to ask that question. The end of this news purge. Canary in a coal mine ends with war horrors. Over 10,000 died in Afghan violence in 2010. Meanwhile, the U.S. is sending 1,400 more Marines to Afghanistan. More on that from the French agency press. With the Air Force's new drone, they say, quote, we can see everything. Meanwhile, too big to fail, Lockheed Martin's got their fingers everywhere. We can see everything. We've got our fingers everywhere. White House picks special ops chief, furthering the death and destruction and the murder and the mayhem and the meat grinder in Afghan, Iraq, and other wars of aggression based on lies and false flag provocateur events that have been used throughout history. Like Sun Tzu said, all war is based on deception. And our last war whore note is bizarre. Glenn Close, the actress, says the use of her image in a Navy video was insulting. Apparently, she was on a ship. They got her to shoot some video. It looks silly when it's out of context, I believe. And I don't think we've seen any of this video, but I think they spliced it in with other racier material and their own sketches and SNL garbage, and it's all bawdy and exactly as you would expect. But Glenn Close is not happy. Now, my friends, as I told you, we are going to have an in-studio guest coming very soon, an old friend to Media Monarchy. So for the remaining time, we're going to blast through as much as we can that remains on Media Monarchy, as well as our sister sites. So we'll begin again with geopolitics, United States of Eurasia, plus a little collateral damage. Newsweek pushing covert war in Iran, assassinations, cyber attacks, and sabotage. I got this from a site called Flash Traffic Blog. And they cover many stories related to the Middle East. There seems to be an Israeli bent to it, but it's fascinating. There's a story about Israel discovering another 16 trillion cubic feet of natural gas, which has many asking the question, is this biblical prophecy or just political geology? Meanwhile, Russian head Medvedev canceled his trip to Israel. Meanwhile, he's planning instead a trip to visit Palestinian areas. All three of those stories go to flashtrafficblog.wordpress.com. An excellent piece from Kenny Sideshow about big sis Janet Napolitano in Israel, which we mentioned just a few minutes ago, on Message. Meanwhile, China preparing for armed conflict in every direction. More on that from The Telegraph. Washington Post reports on the Pakistani shock by the assassination of a popular governor. And on a lighter note, from Danger Room, a belated Happy New Year from Russia's sexiest spy appearing on some type of Russian SNL type show. Meanwhile, from 247wallstreet.com, American cities that are running out of people. The population of the United States has increased steadily by roughly 2.5 million people every year since World War II. Throughout prosperity and hard times, Americans continue to have families. Many of the country's regions have expanded to accommodate this population increase. Meanwhile, some cities have grown faster than others as the result of being at the center of some important new technology or job market. Others have lost residents, as we will see, and we'll break down this list of, I believe, 6 or 7 main cities that are losing residents. Others have lost residents because of failing industries and migration. And can you guess what's on the list? You probably have a good idea of what's number one with a bullet. The winners slash losers: Rochester, New York, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Dayton, Ohio, Buffalo, New York, Cleveland, Ohio, Flint, Michigan, and of course, number one, New Orleans, Louisiana. With the exception of Louisiana, the rest of those are all in the Rust Belt, places that used to thrive on American industry, to not even get into a discussion of cars and any of that. But we used to make things here. We used to make things other people around the world wanted, whether that was TVs or cars. Again, not to debate the evils of both of those things. But now we've mentioned television, and we get this from the New York Times. Americans watched more television than ever in 2010, and I add that as America falls down, TV viewing continues to edge up. Historians may someday note with wonder that by the end of 2010, at least six cable TV shows were about auctioneers and pawnbrokers. What does that say about us? And they're all considered successes by their respective channels. Countless shows were about cops and robbers, too, and countless hours were devoted to competitive singing, dancing, and even figure skating. And they each found an audience, proving again that television remains a refuge in the media revolution. Americans watched more television than ever in 2010, according to the Nielsen Company. Total viewing of broadcast and basic channels rose about 1% for the year to an average of 34 hours per person per week. The generation-long shift to cable from broadcast continued, but subtly, as the smallest of the big four broadcast networks, NBC, still retained more than twice as many viewers as the largest basic cable channel, USA. Cable hits like Jersey Shore on MTV and The Walking Dead on AMC were showered with media attention and affection, but the most popular new show was CBS's Hawaii Five-0. That's right, the 40-year-old show. Let's switch now, my friends, to cyberspacewar.com with a story that started to get a good bit of coverage. And again, thanks to all the folks who share links, comment, tweet, any of those things in this realm of tools that we have in the tubes, which is not to belittle the fact that we're going through a Gutenberg-like revolution. But we have stories like this, and I believe we're going to get into some of these discussions about technology and not the inherent evils of technology, but what happens when these things are in the wrong hands. Goldman Sachs investing in Facebook at a $50 billion valuation. New York Times asking the question, fortunately, why are taxpayers subsidizing Facebook and the next bubble? We want to call it the social network bubble. Goldman Sachs has reached out to its wealthy private clients, offering them a chance to invest in Facebook, the hot social networking giant that's considering a possible public offering in 2012. I'll spare you all the other gory bankster details. But we, of course, always want to mention, when we mention Facebook, we want to mention NQTEL, the investment arm of the CIA that helped get Facebook going. Just one of them. I'm not trying to be grandiose and say the CIA started Facebook. But follow the money. William Ingdahl has a great piece on WikiLeaks, a big, dangerous U.S. government con job, as we stand bracing for the Bank of America leaks to come very soon, and God knows what that could lead us to. But a quick blast down the January 6th DEF CON on cyberspacewar.com. Bad calls and fake claims. Warrantless cell phone search gets the green light in California. VoIP decision means Skype now illegal in Shanghai. First solar eclipse of the year was January 4th. The quadranted meteor shower was the same time. Meanwhile, Judith Miller, the reporter behind the WMD claims in the New York Times and the lies in the run-up to the wars, calls the kettle black, calls Julian Assange a bad journalist. Our last DEFCON note is the fake White House holiday email is a cyber attack, in case you got sent that. A story about the Battle of Los Angeles, which goes back to February 25th of 1942, an interesting story. And again, thanks to Alan in Omaha for posting so many interesting stories from the past, which hope and help shed light on what's in the present and the future. And isn't there a movie coming out called The Battle of Los Angeles very soon? We have transient lunar phenomena. And we have computers that see you and keep watch over you. Returning again to the New York Times, when computers keep watch. Hundreds of correctional officers from prisons across America descended last spring on a shuttered penitentiary in West Virginia for annual training exercises, my home state of West Virginia, becoming a leader in the field of police state biometric technology. Some officers play the role of prisoners, acting like gang members and stirring up trouble, including a mock riot. The latest in prison gear got a workout: body armor, shields, riot helmets, smoke bombs, gas masks, and at this year's drill, computers that could see the action. Perched above the prison yard, five cameras tracked the play-acting prisoners, and AI software analyzed the images to recognize faces, gestures, and patterns of group behavior. Now, we blast down through the whole story where we mention all of the tie-ins and connect with Microsoft and the interface between man and machine. So just imagine all the things that are discussed in this article. When computers keep watch, and I'll give you the last paragraph, which is a quote from Eric Schmidt, chief executive of Google. Quote, "It was just too sensitive and we didn't want to go there. You want to avoid enabling stalker behavior." So what on earth are they fearing, and what are we not aware of that perhaps we should be fearing? We'll switch now quickly to Food World Order as we blast through the updates there. Just a few posts there, and again, we'll throw out the call for folks. If food stories are your passion, food, health, gardening, anything that would fall under the foodworldorder.com banner, you can get in touch with me, mediamonarchy@gmail.com. We'll begin with the January 6th news purge. That is the binge and purge, if you're nasty. Food banks, no bids, and drinkifying. We'll start with the bad from Alternate. Millions in the U.S. heading to food banks for the first time. Farmwars.info, you may recall our friend Barbara Peterson. We interviewed for Media Monarchy back in October. She has a new article breaking down the USDA certified organics dirty little secret, and that would be Neotame from the makers of aspartame. Food supply company employing former head of defense contracting agency wins a $4 billion no-bid contract. See how that works? More on that from allgov.com. D. Vice getting into Pepsi, putting an end to chewing by drinkifying food. Tropicals, I forget what this new drink is. It's slush in a tube that you basically kind of slurp out, and it makes me think of Patton Oswalt talking about the whatever, the bowls at Kentucky Fried Chicken. You pile my food in a bowl. I don't want to spend precious time chewing. Another reason fast food makes you fat and sick, from Natural Health News, that would be fluoride in fast food wrappers. We already know we've got BPA in the receipts now. Bizarre fluoride agents in the fast food wrappers, so they're not sticky. And we'll end with the good from Cryptogon.com, from the land of the Kiwi, noting that almost 60% of New Zealanders maintain vegetable gardens. Furthermore, on foodworldorder.com, Pennsylvania allows gas fracking waste to be dumped in local waterways. This story from activistpost.com. We note it was revealed by the Associated Press that the state of Pennsylvania is allowing, quote, wastewater so salty, so polluted with metals like barium and strontium, end quote, to be flushed into local waterways. This is called fracking, and this relates to Marcellus Shale, and this relates to the documentary film Gasland, which we reported to you a few weeks ago, caused a somewhat not quite vocal 9/11 truther, prominent actor, Mark Ruffalo, who's about to be Allen Ginsberg in the film Howl opening. He's on the list because he helped organize screenings of Gasland. And there's more reports there where we discovered that other companies were contracting out of Pennsylvania. It relates to the Israeli company and all those things we went over several months ago. Animal farms get bigger and bigger. That's from allgov.com. And again, we know that's why things like the food safety bill doesn't address the real problems, because they come from the factory farms. They cause the problems and we get blamed for it. It's like a false flag. Natural News getting into a leaked document. No, not from LeakyWeeks. EPA knowingly approved bee-killing pesticide. Colorado beekeeper recently obtained a leaked document revealing that the EPA knows a popular crop pesticide is killing off honeybees, but allowed its continued approval anyway. That would be the EPA that said the air was safe to breathe at Ground Zero. So speaking of Ground Zero, we'll close this hour and we'll close all our coverage from Media Monarchy and all the other related sites to remind you of the latest episode from a man, Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org, dreaming of Indrid Cold and the Mothman Addendum. Going right back to my home state of West Virginia. And what I'll say about Clyde is what I say about all the other fantastic, independent, non-commercial, alternative media outlets we're proud enough to be associated with. If you find the information valuable, if it, not to sound corny, but it can help enrich your life. I would say that about shows that I listen to, about bands that I like, art that I enjoy, films that I love. Does it or does it not enrich your life? And that's the question you have to start asking about things, is of course everybody's money's going to get tighter. And we're going to have to keep it local, in whatever way that means. So my friends, like I said, that was all the news that's fit to suppress. We're going to take a break, and we're going to be back with an in-studio interview with an old friend of Media Monarchy, my friend Zach Bossart, in studio. We're going to take a little break and listen to the United States of Eurasia with a little bit of Collateral Damage from, of course, Muse.
Must we do as we're told?
That was, of course, Muse from last year's The Resistance, or God, does that go back to 2009? United States of Eurasia, plus a little collateral damage at the end. I believe Wikipedia even says that that song, which you can hear in the lyrics, is basically based on 1984. Whether he went on with the diary or whether he did not go on with it, my friends... This is the 200th episode of MediaMonarchy.com, and like I said at the top of the show, sure, I wanted to do some grandiose, you know, big retrospective kind of episode and go over 2010 or go over our successes that we've had over the last year, all those things, but things keep moving far too quickly to kind of keep up with any of that. But the idea I got from my man James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, he had a recent episode called Meet James Corbett, and as I was thinking of something special to do for the 200th episode, I thought maybe I'd take a cue from James and have a friend come on. Someone who I've known, God, how long now? I mean, going on almost 5 years?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think we met, summer of 2006, I believe.
Okay, so it'll be coming up on 5 years. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is my friend Zach Bossart. Welcome to Media Monarchy.
Thank you very much, James.
So, the Meet James Corbett episode, he basically had a friend of his ask questions about Media Monarchy, or James Corbett. So I thought we would try and do a similar thing. And I'm not trying to make this any kind of like, oh, let's... James is so great, let's learn everything about him. But I think... the site and the show is interesting enough that I think people wonder sometimes, you know, how it's done, I guess, is a way to. And people wonder, you know, the personality behind folks and maybe, you know, and how that may color the way they present the news, the way they interpret things. So you are my first thought of someone to bring on the show because you literally, I think, have been there since episode number one.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Long story short, I got a job where Zach already worked at a grocery store chain here in Portland, Oregon, and only in Oregon. And we worked night crew. And I had wanted to get a job here in Portland in radio, but I couldn't do it volunteer if I didn't have a regular jobby job. Mm. So the moment I got the night gig, not long after that, I hooked up here at Portland Radio Authority and started to do a show. It was probably only a few weeks into my stint in the graveyard shift. But that's where we met, and that's where we started to talk about politics and news. And the thing we, I think, kicked it off and really started to kick it off and get along and share ideas and things was 9/11 Synchronicity, the podcast by our man Richard Andrew Grove, now of TragedyAndHope.com, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of my favorite things about, like, at first, when I first met you, you know, it was like we were out on break or something, and one of the first, you know, things that I did was, like, okay, there's a new guy on crew. Let's make sure he didn't vote for Bush. That was really, like, as base level, politically speaking, that I was at the
time. See what we're dealing with.
I'm like, well, let's see if this guy's good. All right. I like this guy. I like the cut of his jib.
So I guess I thought of just asking you to sort of interview me, I guess, which puts mm-hmm. me in an odd spot because I know it's always tough because I want to turn around and talk a bunch or direct the conversation. But I guess... No, take it away. I don't know what area or what avenue direction you want to try and go.
Well, I think it's a relatively, you know, it's a unique opportunity that you've given me here just because I've been listening, you know, since day one. And every so often, you know, it's tough to get a hold of you sometimes. A lot of work goes into this, and I know that. And so it's just like, well, shoot, there's always questions that I want to ask him. But am I going to get a hold of him next week? So, you know, I guess... I couldn't pass this up. Of course not. I mean,
so right out of the gate, what's
right out of the gate? All right. Well, what I got first off is, you know, remembering back to when we were on the graveyard and when you were shopping around for a place to broadcast the radio version of Media Monarchy because mm-hmm. you already had it on the web.
Yeah.
How did you wind up with Portland Radio Authority? I mean, did you just walk in and say, "Hey, I want a show"?
The way it worked out with PRA, and I went to, there's a great independent non-commercial radio station in Portland. It's been around for a long time, 90.1 FM KBOO. That, for me, when I moved to Portland in the fall of 2005, that was the first place I went because I knew that, hey, that's, you know, they're an FM broadcast, and it was the most comparable to where I was coming from WSHC, the station I worked for back east in my college town. But I realized early on there that there was no way I was going to get a show immediately, that there was a lot of things going on and a lot of the folks seemed to be grandfathered into their shows. Mm-hmm. So that if they didn't move, no movement was going to happen and you couldn't kind of get in unless somebody else decided to quit their show and you find that people have been doing shows there for years and years. I basically would have been a, you know, phone answering, envelope licking lackey. And my own pride coming from being the music director back east wouldn't let me, you know, go back to answering phones. So I kind of realized, and I talked with some of the folks there, and I think the management has changed. And again, I'm not trying to talk crap about them at all.
I don't know.
If it sounds that way. But I talked with them and basically said, well, this probably won't work out for me. Mm. Meanwhile, Portland Radio Authority started to get a buzz as a pirate signal downtown Portland.
Yeah, I recall that, barely.
And I don't even actually know the frequency they were using, but at the time, my girlfriend and I were both doing some work for the Film Center, and it was always on there, and she won tickets to go... We went to see a band called Low. We won tickets to see them at the Doug Fir, and they were doing all kinds of great stuff, and I just heard more and more buzz about the Portland Radio Authority. The flashback to this is I wasn't hired yet. I was still doing temp work as the buzz for PRA was growing. they got busted by the FCC. We got busted by the FCC for the pirate signal. And when that happened, I think a lot of people quit because, I don't know, if it lost the, you know, the outlaw appeal, or people didn't want to do it because it was only on the internet, which, you know, they would probably kick themselves now. And we're like, yeah. Oh, the internet, is that thing still around? As my microphone cuts out.
Well, I've totally noticed that one over the years. Like, you know, I used to do the shows with indie media, and people are like, oh, you have a radio show. Oh, it's on the internet?
Uh-huh.
You know, and then it's just funny to see how things quickly changed.
Because at that time, you know, there wasn't really any 3G and all that kind of stuff to speak of, where people can get everything on their mobile device. Mm. But basically, when PRA got popped by the FCC, they went to just purely being online on praradio.org, and I think because a lot of people left, it opened up a ton of slots. So I essentially sent an email to Jeff Simmons, who's now gone on to start radio23.org, and he's got Cascade Community Radio, and all that stuff is growing, and we can talk more about that later if you want. Got in touch with him, gave him the idea for the show, and he was essentially like, absolutely, sounds great, come on board, because I don't think there was anybody doing any kind of talk or news or any kind of current affairs show.
Mostly just music, wasn't it?
It's mostly just music, as I think it still, for the most part, is to this day on PRA. So that was how it started, and Jeff Simmons brought me in there and gave me the tour and gave me the lowdown, and it was in our old studios. We, of course, have been in these new studios for, God, it's going to be 2 years almost, I
wow,
guess.
Wow, already?
I think. Or maybe it's just a year.
Maybe a year.
Maybe just a year.
Or somewhere between a year and two.
A little confused.
Well, yeah,
but that's how I ended up at PRA, and even though the question for me comes up, and I must admit it's coming up more and more, of the question between, well, can I maybe just do this better from home, from my kind of home base and my home office where I can have things set up all the time? But there's something I've always liked having a place to go to at a scheduled time to do your thing. So whether that was doing theater and sound design stuff back east, I liked the fact that, you know, the play opens on January 7th at 8 o'clock. It's like, so your stuff better be done.
Yeah.
It gave you the deadline to get that sound design together. So the same thing with having a radio shift, as you know, that Friday mornings at 10 a.m. I have a show and I'm live. And especially now with the folks that carry the show and carry it live,
They're expecting it,
and I'm even more locked in. So it's kind of, it's difficult to just be like, oh, you know, oh, I'm not going to go in, which, yeah, doesn't happen. And I plan things out in advance so that, you know, hopefully folks know and they can plan around it. So, I mean, that's the way it's been going, and that's the way I foresee it to continue going. But I think, you know, definitely I probably am going to start to morph to maybe do a little more home-based and audio-video kind of work. I'm not saying I'm not going to do a weekly show, at least not yet. There's something about it that, you know, it's hard.
Yeah.
The amount of news that I go over and have to just accumulate and save and collate and cross-reference and put in, it takes a toll. And I wonder sometimes if Media Monarchy would be better pointed towards getting a little more in-depth into certain areas. However, I also know that the whole reason I think the show is what it is and why it's, you know, as popular, if I can say that, as it is because of the format, is because it has a poop load of news in a two-hour, you know, weekly podcast. You can pretty much get the rundown on everything that's going on.
Well, that actually, shoot, that correlates to a whole bunch of other questions I had as well. But specifically, I've known you for years, and I'm still wondering this one every week when I tune in and listen. I'm sitting there going, you know, how do you manage your time to, you know, to get Media Monarchy ready each week? I mean, there's a ton of information that you're coming through. I mean, you've mentioned before that you use the, like, what is it? It's the Gmail thing where it dumps news.
Yeah,
relating to
I use the
tags.
Like Google Reader is their like RSS subscription service. So I subscribe to way too many things, and I need to do some you know, cleaning in there to get rid of things that just kind of clog it up.
But I mean, how many hours like per week goes into a 2-hour episode?
I couldn't even say.
It's, no guesstimations at all.
I mean, because it would basically, you know, well, it would probably be a few hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
So, a few hours. So, I mean, at least 12 hours to make 2 hours.
About as much as a full-time job.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably a little more, I'm guessing. Mr. Modest here.
But it's, I mean, that's the thing. It's a way to, and again, something I think I kind of wanted to address with having you in here is to sort of show in a way where there's no kind of magic,
mm-hmm.
you know, secret. Now, yes, of course, I've studied media essentially all my life, so that part comes naturally to me. But as far as the production of the show with Ustream videos and the podcast and all that other kind of stuff, it's like I've just kind of been learning as I go along. And I think it's important to kind of tell folks where it's like, no, I just subscribe to websites that I like.
Mm-hmm.
I go through those feeds. I put things in bookmark folders. So like the, you know, the news purge that we go over that has the little subheadings of things, whether it's 9/11 news or mm-hmm. geopolitics or holy hexes or all those things. I have little folders in my, you know, bookmark manager.
Hmm.
And I put the related stories in there, so as the week starts to go by and I start to build things in there, you can start to see how things will fit together, and I'll sort of update those and maybe, you know, pull out something old and put in an update if it's kind of a breaking or developing story. But I just kind of build them and catalog them in a folder. In a folder, and then they're able to sort of like, I can post them. And I'm not starting from scratch. It's like the work has already been done, kind of whittling it down by having it in those folders. Then I also just try and find whatever, maybe, you know, I can only really reasonably by myself post one good thing to Media Monarchy a day.
Mm-hmm.
Because then I started Food World Order, and then I started Cyberspace War. And fortunately, I've got Alan in Omaha posting to Cyberspace War. Mm-hmm. And if I could get somebody doing the same thing on Food World Order, if I could start to get folks that were interested in, say, some of those subheadings into just 9/11 stuff or just mm-hmm. geopolitical things and have them focus and be able to say, you know, geopolitics, Zach, is your topic, so
mm-hmm.
once a week, you know, I'd want you to post something. And whether that was just a mm-hmm. like a breakdown or a blurb or just a list of headlines or something in a way to kind of mm-hmm. cover that angle.
Area.
And that, to me, would be the way to sort of help build Media Monarchy and to have... I wouldn't even want to think of it as like, oh, I can have, you know, tint my fingers and have my minions, do work.
You're not Mr. Burns, I'm afraid not.
I'm not striving for that. But it would be an awesome way, I mean, to help build it. Mm-hmm. I know... I loved seeing it. Years ago, now, blacklistednews.com was pretty much just run by Doug.
Yeah.
And I've been in touch with him. We don't keep a whole lot in touch anymore because he got a couple extra folks that were doing their own other smaller websites to sort of shutter those sites and come on board with mm-hmm. Blacklisted News. And once he got some folks else in there, they just exploded, and they've become mm-hmm. one of the premier alternative news sites out there.
Excellent.
And it's because there's a few people, I think, kind of around the clock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll be out at 2 in the morning having a cigarette and looking at Twitter on my mm-hmm. iPod and see stuff from Blacklisted News, and it's just...
Yeah.
It's just trying to, I guess, to build that, and I can only kind of slowly and surely do it because there has to be some kind of quality control in a way. Because it's still, I want to have the sort of, I guess, editorial control that I want things to look the certain way and to, you know, have some level of quality that I think is the thing that's brought people to the site in the first place.
Well, Media Monarchy has a feel to it, you know. It's,
uh-huh.
I mean, it's practically got a personality to it. You know, anytime you've, you know, like been like, gosh, you know, spinning too many plates, could probably use some help. And I'm like going... Well, I'd like to help, but I've got to get my stuff figured out. And then, oh, God, I don't want to steal uh-huh. the thunder because
uh-huh.
it's your thing. You know, it's like your baby. You know, I'll babysit for a little bit, but I'm not going to guarantee the kid's going to look the same afterwards.
But that would be really, I think, for me, kind of ideal pipe dream kind of way to keep kind of growing and building the site. And that would be having people working those specific areas that would then leave me maybe to just do the show version and go over mm-hmm. all that media, or to maybe begin to focus on maybe just doing more interview mm-hmm. type shows like a Red Ice Radio style, or any number of things. But yeah, I mean,
well, it
many,
can easily build into a network of different shows.
Yeah.
Which is always something that I'm like, I almost fantasize about it whenever you're like doing your weekly show. I'm just like, oh gosh, you know what you could do?
If
you know what you could do?
Yeah,
you know.
If with a cyberspace war show. And mm-hmm, yeah, those, exactly. Some of those things you and I have talked about.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, there's plenty of times even my coworkers, like I've gotten quite a few of my coworkers mm-hmm. to actively listen and look at your website. And they're sitting there going, gosh, how do I help? I don't know anything. Oh my God, I don't know anything. And they kind of panic about it, but it's just like, it's because it's got that kind of magic, like feel to it. Cause you run a good show.
Thank you.
You run a really good show.
Thanks.
And so people listen to it and they're like, oh gosh, he's such a professional. I can't even hold a candle to that. But it's not like you went to college to do exclusively this.
No.
You've been learning on the fly.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, now
it's patience.
I went to college and have a degree in communications, but that covered speech and debate, you know, and all those sort of other kind of general things. No, this was something my own kind of passion and interest kind of brought me into.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to go back to the questions.
Okay,
now.
Please.
I think we bounced around.
Oh, and then we could do lightning round at
lightning
the end.
Lightning round, quick. Well, actually, you know, we touched on this a bit in the past year, but you know, so yeah, going back to the graveyard shifts, it's like when we were both listening to 9/11 Synchronicity mm-hmm. and just like actively pursuing everything that Richard Grove was putting out at that point in
uh-huh.
time, which was a huge amount of data. It was quite fascinating, but yeah, it's a question of. Like, you were just starting the show at about that time, and he wasn't even done with Synchronicity yet.
No.
Like, you had just started that, and so I've always wondered, like, at what point, like, did the show Synchronicity, like, push you to, like, motivate you to go even further and faster with what you were working on?
I think it probably did. I think, I mean, I can't say that had there not been 9/11 Synchronicity that I wouldn't have started... Media Monarchy radio show. And mm-hmm. again, now that it's several years past, I can't remember the exact kind of chain of events. But no, I feel absolutely the kind of birth and that, you know, that spark to put, I guess, kind of not the finishing move, but to really kind of kick it into motion, I think ran, yeah, concurrently with mm-hmm. being turned on and being so kind of energized by 9/11 Synchronicity
mm-hmm.
that was, yeah, that kind of last push of just sort of like, oh, okay. I think I know what I want to do with this.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I totally had a similar thing going on with that. It was just like, you know, you wanted to see what the Pentagon photos
uh-huh.
looked like. And that's what led you into doing your own research.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for me, I was always skeptical of stuff. But it was really 9/11 Synchronicity that made me go, I need to be asking more questions.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you think Synchronicity would be something to recommend to other people who want to...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because, I mean, the show, that's what's genius about the way mm-hmm. you kind of built it, is that it grows and builds. So if you start from episode one, you kind of start from the ground mm-hmm. floor, and or even as he would say, you know, get under the building to the foundation so you can have the understanding. It
mm-hmm.
it goes in a way in order that slowly... fleshes out, I think, the big picture. So,
well, it's enough of a narrative that it's kind of like you're going on a journey of a story.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody likes a good story.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, for folks who are listening, you know, to audiobooks and things that are, you know, countless hours long,
mm-hmm.
9/11 Synchronicity is also, I don't even know how many hours
ultimately it is. I think the final episode was about 17 hours long. That was one episode.
As a single podcast. So if that was the thing, it got bigger, and it made, you know, and it made more demands on you as it went along for mm-hmm. you to stay tuned in
and think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like I found myself continuously looking up stuff that I had just heard of. You know, like, I'm obsessed with Terrence McKenna. I never
mm-hmm.
even heard of the guy before Richard Grove.
Uh-huh.
That was awesome. Specifically when it comes to staying motivated, you know, there's plenty of times we all get bogged down with, you know, way too many places to spin, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And besides technical information for people who are more interested in becoming the media rather than just
uh-huh.
hating it,
Or not paying attention to it at all.
Yes, I've watched plenty of people just shut down and tune out.
They, you know, aren't totally crazy.
No. I can understand it. I just don't do it. Basically, how do you stay motivated, and what kind of mental or psychological pitfalls do you now know how to avoid?
I think early on, and I was thinking of this when you were talking about how people that maybe when they first get turned on to things, and not just Media Monarchy, but any kind of alternative media, that you have this spark and it's like, oh, I want to do something. But in a way, it's almost that you need to still kind of do more homework as you're getting turned on to things. Because essentially, I think most the information war is waged kind of one-on-one, I think.
Yeah.
That's always been, for me, the most kind of successful way to talk about any of this kind of stuff has been with people, with friends, with family, with coworkers, and people that you know that you can kind of figure out what they're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
But to stay motivated, I guess it's just being a media geek. I mean, I think that's what I've said, is that I basically kind of shifted from, you know, indie rock to alternative media.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, both have had so many kind of exciting developments. And that was the thing for me, that, you know, all through the 90s and 2000s, the developments in, you know, in indie rock or alternative media, you know, it's just another form of alternative media.
Exactly.
This has all kind of been another form of alternative media. And it's always kind of been the stuff that I've been turned on to, you know, I think throughout my life. So whether it's news and politics or whether it's music or film, I think just the constant fascination of things and the fact that there is something constantly moving forward. I guess it seems a little odd to kind of compare earthquakes and horrible events with, you know, oh, that new record from or whoever that.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope, in a way, that, you know, and I think I said earlier on the show, I get comments on the New World Next Week videos that I guess sometimes bug me, you know, more than they should. And that's the thing about anytime you put yourself out there in any way, you know, you're going to be open to criticism. But I guess I didn't really realize until I started to do the videos with James Corbett, and then your face is out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get all those kind of ridiculous criticisms about your facial hair and what you do and how you look and your mannerisms. And why is that guy always smiling? I think I, in a way, just try and keep some kind of lighthearted aspect to all of the stuff that we cover. To go back to saying, when you first get turned on to things, you get the feeling from, and that was really what helped turn me on to things, was folks like Alex Jones.
Mm-hmm.
But when that's your turn on and that's your key into all of this, it can give you the impression that, oh my God, martial law tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that every event is that catalyzing thing, and it's crap hit the fan, and that's what you feel like. And I went through a lot of that.
Yeah.
Of just, oh my God, this, oh man, this is, you know, and I think you end up making moves that just turn people off and scare people.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see, and I saw it myself through things that I, you know, would post fervently or email out to people about, you know, this is it, this thing's going to happen tomorrow, false flag, da-da-da, martial law, is that you can only cry wolf so many times before people aren't paying attention.
Exactly.
So we kind of need to wait and parse things and figure out how to make it all make sense to people without scaring people away, but to also at least kind of impress that there are serious, real things going on.
There are things to be paid attention to.
But I think, hopefully, that's why I try and mix so many things together in the show, that maybe the music and the clips and the slick production is the sugar that can help the medicine go down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah.
Well, you don't, I mean, you do a pretty good job being objective about all these things. You don't get emotional, generally speaking. I haven't really noticed.
But is that, I think that as far as like staying motivated,
I think
being excited about current developments and events.
Well, it's important because it affects people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your driving factor right there.
Question the next.
Obviously, I've got a lot of practice in this. All right. Let's go back to Radio 23, actually.
Okay.
Because I had a couple of... Here we go. Yeah. So, what are they like making any sort of like moves that you see as being just a like? Do you think Radio 23 is kind of like the alternative media that really seals the deal at this point, or do you think there's something better that we could be doing collectively to be working together? Maybe using that as a jumping off point.
I think, you know, using that as a jumping off point, as the telephone rings in the studio. Sorry, folks, I can't answer the phone. I'm live on the air as I hang up on you. But, I mean, I can't speak for Jeff, but I would have to say, you know, that he's probably really stoked by what Radio23.org has kind of grown into, and they now have, like I said, multiple channels. Mm-hmm. Cascade Community Radio that just has, you know, Pacific Northwest broadcasters and content. Mm-hmm. And I think there's also been a push to kind of get a non-commercial FM station here in Portland that would be local music. And I think some of that exists in KZME and some of these other places that, again, I'm not fully, you know, versed on.
Okay. Yeah, it's one of those things where I've definitely heard a few things, but just wanted to know if you...
Well, and I mean, absolutely. I'd like to think that things like Radio 23 are a future and the future of alternative media. It can't all be that way. I mean, that's the angle for folks, you know, who are into radio. There's going to be something else maybe for video or for folks who, you know, what, theater, music, you know. Mm. I think there's going to be hopefully viable ways for those arts and communications to still exist through the changes that may be coming. I guess the fear is basically that, yeah, Media Monarchy, Radio 23, Tragedy and Help, you know, all these outlets can be a form of, you know, new, forward-thinking, alternative media, but it's still difficult when you know that we're dependent on the lines that are owned by AT&T or Comcast and those sort of the means of delivery.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like gatekeepers.
But, you know, as long as we can use it, you know, openly, and it is, as long as everyone has as much access as anyone else, I think there will still be that more of a gravitational move towards alternative media. And that's what we talked about, keeping things local, and whether that's food or whether that's theater or, you know, Kickstarter. And again, all these ways that can help, you know, grow and foster our own kind of communities. All still with the caveat of, well, Kickstarter, it's like, it's all still online.
Oh, yeah.
There has to be, in some way, I guess, some kind of preparation for, what if an EMP goes off and you don't have internet?
Mm-hmm.
For however long amount of time, you know.
Started on a local level, it was a good idea online.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, as a potential.
But, you know, I guess it's covering a lot of different angles and not, I guess, maybe having all the eggs in one basket.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
But I mean, I mean, I'm hopeful for Radio 23 and PRA and, you know, all the other outlets.
And speaking of other outlets, you mentioned a moment ago Tragedy and Hope, and I heard a little rumor that you might be having something in the works with Tragedy and Hope Online Magazine. Can you shed some light on that at the moment?
That is true, and the cat's, I think, totally out of the bag. TragedyandHope.com is an online community where independent media hosts and other folks all kind of meet up and share ideas, and it's basically built as a social network site to where you can have friends and groups and do all those things that you can do on social networking sites. And within the TragedyandHope.com community, within the groups of things discussing, whether it's, you know, the Trivium, you know, the Lost Tools of Learning, or vaccination, or, you know, health stories, or any of those kind of areas, the one that jumped out at me was called Navigating Netflix. Mm-hmm. And it was a way to, and essentially the blurb is that, you know, Netflix subscribers find, you know, diamonds in the rough all the time, but there are things that are kind of hidden in there, and they're maybe not the things that Netflix is going to put up on the front screen and say, hey, you should watch this, which they're not going to do with, hey, you should watch this documentary about, you know, Carnegie and the, you know, steel and the early elites and barons and all those things. But it's there. Mm-hmm. There are documentaries about that within Netflix. So the group was about finding those diamonds in the rough and posting them to the group for other people to kind of go, oh, I'll watch that. And Netflix essentially has you know, a really cheap deal where if you subscribe at the lowest level, which gets you, I'm not sure how many, you know, physical DVDs a month, but you still have unlimited viewing regardless of however many discs you want to get a month. So for a cheap subscription, you have unlimited streaming with, you know, content that's only growing and growing and growing. And I constantly see stuff on there. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know, damn, I've always wanted to see that. But it was never on DVD or, you know, just never had an opportunity. So for whatever reason, the idea kind of grew and turning Navigating Netflix into a podcast. The website is live. NavigatingNetflix.com. It's live and it's still kind of under construction. I'm still playing with the logo and the layout, and I'm still haven't really quite in my mind solidified what the format of the show may be, and maybe that won't happen until we've got a few in the can. I don't really know. But the idea will be to pull from members of the Tragedy and Hope community who are in the group who have films, shows, documentaries, and things that are available on Netflix that they've watched and that they've enjoyed. I mean, it's basically a book club for Netflix.
Yeah, that sounds pretty awesome. Yeah.
Now, for any, for as far as any kind of target date, I'm really not sure. I mean, hopefully in the next, you know, couple of months, hopefully it should see a show come out. But again, whether it's, I don't know if it's going to be audio or video or sometimes one or some, yeah, I haven't fleshed out all those things. But again, NavigatingNetflix.com, is the site is live.
Well, I've got a bit of a softball question that I was holding off, but it should be fairly easy. You recently changed your closing statement at the end of the show.
Oh. You know, and that's something, and I've had other folks ask me about other things, you know, that's either in, say, the notes that are on the website, the show notes, or some of the things on the show. And not always is there some grand design behind some of the things that are in there. Now, of course, you know, I wouldn't just accidentally say something, but the way things maybe started early on, I think I just kept in place because, again, I like the consistency. And again, I think that comes back to having a live show at a given time that folks can count on, you know, some level of quality that they expect from their nightly news. So to try and be as kind of consistent as possible, some things that maybe started out, you know, is maybe not that big a deal, or, you know, even the main quote that that's always surrounded the show about, you know, the 1984, whether we went on with the diary, was never any sort of like, yes, that's the mission statement, you know, of the site. It was just early on kind of a quote about, well, in a way, doing a website like this is sort of like keeping the diary that could get you in trouble later as they're going to crack down on all of these kind of thought police kind of things. So it is a comment on doing a website like Media Monarchy, knowing that, you know, and early on, you know, folks like my mom are just like, oh, you know, don't get in trouble. You're not doing anything you're not supposed to, are you? But if you're, as far as the end of the show, referring to, because I guess what it was, well, either I end shows with what Webster Tarpley would say, and that's get active or get radioactive.
Yeah, you haven't said that as much.
I think I've slowly, either by design or sometimes, again, when the mic is live and you're on and you just, you know, I'm a chatty dude and things fly out of my mouth. So there's sometimes, it, like I said, it's maybe not a grand design, but for there's a part of me that I like the saying from Jello Biafra of Dead Kennedys, don't hate the media, become the media. And I've found that to be maybe a more positive thing. I mean, not that, you know, get active or get radioactive isn't a positive thing. It's kind of a motivational thing. True. But within there, you know, it still contains that, you know, radioactivity. I guess, you know, don't hate the media, you know, still has the word hate in there, but
but it implies a certain amount of more positivity.
I think so. And and maybe more specific to what I'm doing with this kind of media outlet. Because, again, maybe I'm not, you know, get active. Does that mean, you know, go out and protest on the street or yell? It's like, well, I'm not really going to, or bullhorn, I'm not really going to do that stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe, yeah, don't hate the media, become the media, I think is a more maybe apt kind of slogan or rallying cry.
I think it implies more participation.
And, yeah, so, and that's an even better thing, again, to try and get folks in. So, We're coming down to about 15 minutes. You want to start to blast through any of the things in there?
Actually, I've already blasted through most of it. I haven't had to do a radio interview in 3 years.
Well, I know there was you wanted to ask about, I think, a bit of kind of like a cult and belief system kind of things.
That's my specialty. But, Well, one of the things that I came across, you know, while I was always doing research during the graveyard hours was that, you know, it's kind of a funny thing that we're always told that, you know, magic is one of those things just for Disneyland, you know. Uh-huh. It's in a fairy tale. And yet, over and over and over again, all of these people who are in positions of power also are participating in these bizarre rituals. And so I basically came to the conclusion that, well, they're obviously doing something. They're in power.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your feelings on that? I mean, is there any sort of validity in these more esoteric subjects that, I mean, obviously they're holding on to it, so there's something very valid there.
Yeah.
But what does that mean for the everyday person?
I think there's absolute validity to it. I think it's, as I guess I've maybe said on the show, that there are those things that, you know, I may be interested in, but it's maybe not something I want to put on the site.
Because,
of course, I already, you know, will catch grief from folks for having, you know, Clyde Lewis has something about aliens, and people go, oh, why are you putting that crap on your site?
Yeah, yeah.
But as far as, I mean, I think a lot of folks out there know that I had a, you know, conservative Christian upbringing and went to the church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night till I was 15. And the only way, and I don't know that I've ever told this on the radio before, that the only way I got out of going to church on Sunday was that one of my first jobs at the age of 15, I was a dishwasher at a restaurant. I had them put me on Sundays.
Specifically, yeah.
So that I could get out of going to church. So then go to my mom and say, oh, they put me on Sundays. What can I do? I'm just the peon. I don't have any pull with the schedule.
I must say I've probably done that myself.
But I guess, you know, as far as the belief systems and things go, I don't know if I would at this point call myself, you know, agnostic or, you know, there's something going on in the world. And is there higher power? You know, a lot of these things, I feel like I come down on the way that I come down on sometimes things like aliens or other. It's like, I have never seen any evidence of it.
Yeah. You haven't seen it personally.
And, you know, I would basically say that, you know, yeah, there was probably a guy named Jesus Christ. And if we followed his teachings and ideas as much as we claim that we do, we'd probably be in better shape. But beyond that and all the other things that surround it and, you know, end times and prophecy. And I mean, growing up in the church, it was a lot of Armageddon, you know, Revelation, end times kind of stuff. And we see more and more of this coming with all the things in Israel and possible, you know, prophecies and these certain things have to happen. But whatever sect or religion or cult you're talking about, they all have their in-game, in-time scenario that's meant to be, and they're all going to actively work to make it happen.
Make it happen.
So in a way, it's like, well, if this wasn't really, you know, God with a capital G's plan, it's like, well, they're certainly going to make something happen. And unfortunately, the more you learn about, you know, all the other technologies and things, that it's like, man, they could pretty much fake most of the things in Revelation to an extent. As far as, you know, there'll be armies, you know, that will converge, you know, on the north to the south, and some kind of earth event will wipe out both those armies, and then the West will be able to say, aha, see, I made that happen. You know, there are these scenarios in the end times. That's like, we have scalar weapons. We have weather weapons.
The technology exists.
The technology exists.
Fake anything.
And probably...
So how do you believe anything?
Like Project Bluebeam stuff was probably early things that you and I talked about. You know, this either fake alien invasion or fake, you know, rapture or weather or fake, you know, kind of religious event. That does really fascinate me endlessly. I guess when it's esoteric and occult, I mean, it's probably just also my own just lack of, you know, knowledge and awareness about a lot of those areas that keeps me from going, you know, kind of fully into it. But if it's in the realm of talking about you know, staged media events or Orson Welles and War of the Worlds and these technologies that I can, you know, wrap my head around. That that's an angle I can approach, I guess, these kind of stories. But, I mean,
something more solid. Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, as far as, I don't know, I guess it feels strange to discuss, I don't know, the belief systems of things, because I don't know, I guess it depends on...
Well, I study religion, so it's totally a me question.
No,
so.
I know, but and that's what's funny. I mean, coming from a churchy background, as much as I would like to say, I don't really believe any of it.
Well, belief implies a certain amount of faith. As
exactly.
opposed to knowing.
Yeah, that's a good point. But it just drilled so much into my head at a young age that it's still hard to kind of escape. And having that background, at least on some level, can help me go, oh, there's that thing in Israel they were talking to, or these, you know, events that I know they're kind of pushing for.
I heard about that in Sunday school.
Exactly. Yeah.
And now it's happening.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And that's, you know, that's what's been great hooking up with somebody like Clyde Lewis, too, because he does a lot of kind of religious history and gets into those areas more that again, I've kind of learned a lot from. But yeah, as far as, you know, I was a, you know, born again Christian at a young age, and you know, the belief is that, you know, that can never be undone.
Yeah.
So the, you know, the part of me would go, well, I guess I'm good then. I can
seem fairly decent.
Yeah, I can pursue. Well, no, I meant like I should be good to go. In that, well, if it's all, you know, if it's all a bunch of crap, it doesn't really matter. We're all, you know, worm food anyway.
Gotcha.
But if it is all true, I am technically a born-again Christian, so...
But then you got to start going into, well, is this the right religion? Or was it that one that was older?
Yeah.
Or is it the one that was before that? It's an ad infinitum kind of game.
So I guess to flip it around, to ask you to ask me, I don't know, what kind of things do you think... folks wonder about the site and the show, or any other kind of, you know, behind the curtain kind of things. I guess I try not to keep things too kind of mystical in a way where it's like, you know, I tell everybody, you know, what music we use or where, you know, all of those kind of things.
Well, I think there's always been, like, just in general, since it was invented, there's always been the mystical relationship between the listener and the person on the other side of the radio.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that's kind of impossible to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know, you seem more open than most, so I guess it just makes somebody want to go, what else? You know, like,
yeah.
I want to know more.
That may be,
because
yeah.
you're so open with it.
And that can sometimes, and maybe that's the double-edged sword sometimes, that, you know, being what I think, you know, makes the show fun is being, you know, kind of personable and more conversational and, you know, was always told, you know, even back on, you know, the FM radio in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, that, you know, don't imagine you're talking to thousands of people. Just imagine you're talking to, you know, a handful of friends, and I've always tried to do that. And again, having a set place and a set time to do the show can kind of help that and not so much make it feel like, oh my God, there's, you know, there's going to be people listening live and it's got to be perfect. But yeah, so the more you give, the more people are going to kind of want out of it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I could see that. You open up a can of worms and, see, look at this. And then they want to see more.
So I guess do those, what other notes were we going to discuss? Oh, yeah. I don't know that we can really get into transhumanism and...
Oh, gosh, no.
Time Wave Zero and any of those kind of things. No,
no.
I would... You know, one thing I wrote down, and to go back to again, you know, that we kind of met at work in the graveyard shift, stocking groceries, where you could have one, you know, earbud in, and you could be listening to podcasts, and you could be listening to audiobooks or lectures or Terrence McKenna or 9/11 Synchronicity or... you know, whatever shows of that day. And because, I mean, it was an 8-hour shift.
That was one of the advantages of working graveyard.
I could keep up on so many podcasts. And yeah, I mean, it was kind of an accelerated kind of learning curve. But now there's no way, you know, and I fortunately work in the daytime. And it was good too, because now I'm able to talk to
people. Talk to more people and talk to coworkers. And to come back to that thing of like, that's where I think, you know, the information war is. It's kind of one-on-one in talking with folks. It's never for me been about, you know, bullhorning or yelling at people or getting in people's faces or any of that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's always just been more of a kind of one-on-one thing that, you know, most effectively for me does it. One thing I do, I told somebody this the other day, and I think they enjoyed it. And maybe actually it was you, but
possibly
at the job when on lunch break, there's our little break room upstairs where there's usually all the pieces of newspaper from the day, and it's basically the Oregonian and the New York Times. So flipping through the papers while I'm having my lunch, I usually have a pen or grab a pen. And so when there are articles that rub me the wrong way, I add little addendums and little notes on the articles about, yeah, you know, essentially say, yeah, but what about da-da-da? Or, you know, Google, you know, such and such.
I noticed they didn't talk about this part.
Exactly. So for case in point, I think the last one I did was this, the story about Goldman Sachs, you know, further into bed with Facebook, and they had this kind of chart that mentioned all of Facebook's, you know, kind of wealthy donors and starters. And so below it, I just kind of wrote, you know, with a little asterisk, it was like not listed in Qtel, the investment arm of the Central Intelligence Agency. And just adding little things like that in the newspaper. So then I don't know who's going to come up next and, you know, flip through it and maybe see it. And maybe they're going to go, hey, what's, you know, what's the deal with that?
And I think, well, it's kind of funny. Like, I've totally had the same thing in my workplace environment, except I don't end up writing with it. Like,
you don't end up vandalizing things.
Well, no, not on the paper per se. But like, you know, people, thanks to you, actually, I blame you for this. Like, getting the interpersonal dialogue going on, especially after getting out of graveyard shift, like, can basically make you a bit of a go-to person for questions that people have in the newspaper.
Absolutely.
And that's how I've made a majority of my friends at my workplace, just because they don't have the time necessarily to do all the research, but they know that I have no life.
or know that that's a passionate area of yours. So then when something happens, they're like, oh, I'm going to ask. Yeah, you're the dude I wanted to ask about. Like, I mean, I said, I got so many questions from folks about WikiLeaks.
Exactly.
Just a few weeks ago. I was like, man, this is, you know, unbelievable.
Couldn't keep up with it.
Yeah, it was it was amazing. Man, we're pretty much out of time here, and I don't know if we got into, you know, as many of the areas as we wanted to, but I hope for folks, you know, it shed some kind of light on things. And again, I just wanted to bring on you as a personal friend and as someone who's been with Media Monarchy, like we said, from the very beginning. So your input and your, you know, kind of, you've helped keep me motivated. You and Richard Grove and my girl, you know, and those kind of closer folks, that's a motivation too, to kind of help things, you know, keep moving. And those folks help, you know, spread the word about the show or ask questions or, you know, are there for help. So again, I think having you on is sort of also just kind of a thank you to you for the help that you've given Media Monarchy.
You were more than welcome.
Thanks, man. So
as long as I keep having episodes to listen to. You're like, you keep bringing the content, I'll still be here.
I will. So we can provide some links for folks, because you run a few blogs, and of course, like everyone, we're all on NQTEL's Facebook. And Zach, if you want, we can supply links for folks, and they can get in touch with you. And because, like I said, you have a few blogs, and you get into more esoteric things that, again, Media Monarchy may not touch. So again, thanks so much, man.
Yeah, anytime.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, bringing to a close the 200th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. Like I said, sure, I want to do some big grandiose thing with, you know, dancers and pyrotechnics, but, you know, it's just not feasible. And the news and everything keeps moving on so rapidly that it's all I can do to kind of keep up with the way that we do this show. So needless to say, I can't do it without you. Your support helps keep all of these things going. Your donations are greatly appreciated. And again, you can make contact with me, mediamonarchy@gmail.com, and we'll keep doing it. This has been episode 200 for January 7th, 2011. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you, as we noted earlier, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the New World Nexus video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.